Hi, I'm Jerry Pippen. We're going to start the UFO show here. I call it Area 51B. Jim Hickman, how are you?
Great. How are you doing, Jerry?
Pretty good. Mm-hmm. Got a lot of interest in what we were doing last week.
Great.
Anything new this week?
Well, we've had just a whole list of sightings this last week. Of course, I guess the biggest sighting would be the mirror splashing down in the South Pacific.
Yeah.
People saw that all over that part of the world.
A lot of people have always said that these UFOs are just things like that, space junk coming down, things
That's
like
that.
That's
the latest excuse, yes.
Yeah.
For once, it actually was space debris.
Yeah, you're right about that. One good thing, the Russians really weren't that far off where they said they were going to be.
Yeah, they were very close.
Yeah, so they kind of redeemed themselves, I guess.
Yeah.
If they needed redeeming.
Exactly, and they gave quite a good light show to everybody, too. I saw the video of that. It was completely different than any of the UFO videos or pictures I've ever seen. So we can now tell the difference between a space debris and UFOs.
officially, you're definitely right about that. So, you know, we're talking about Russians and their mere space station and things, and you alluded in one of our first shows that actually all the astronauts almost have seen UFOs.
Well, quite a few of them have. One of the latest to come out is Story Musgrave. Of course, he's more famous shuttle astronauts. But it goes clear back to Gordon Cooper and his flight, where he saw multiple UFOs. They were also seen during the Gemini flights. I believe Neil Armstrong saw one while he was piloting a Gemini spacecraft. And actually, on my webpage, I have, I would say, 20 to 30 quotes by these different astronauts throughout the years of what they have seen and trying to describe what they've seen.
We have an Oklahoma ufologist here. You did go to Phoenix for a little while, didn't you?
I've been to Phoenix on some investigations back in the 90s.
But you've always kept your home in Oklahoma?
Yes, I was born in Hobart, and I've lived here most of my life. I've spent some time in the West Coast, but most of my life I've been here.
Yeah, we were talking with Jim Hickman the first time around, and we talked about how you got infused with the UFO fever, and that was very simply because you saw one at Hobart.
Exactly. And this is quite a few years ago, back in the early 60s. And I was a mere child at the time, I believe around 7. But my folks saw it. My older sister saw it. Our neighbors all saw it. It was one of the largest UFOs I've ever heard of. It basically covered our whole area that we have. We had a farm down there, and it covered the whole area, as large as several football fields. And it flew right over our house at, I'd say, about 50 to 75 feet, and really didn't make any sound or anything, and it had really, really bright rows of lights on it, like aircraft landing lights.
Mm-hmm.
It had two rows of those. And flew over our house, and of course it scared my family to death. It kind of hovered over the house for a while, and my dad was interested in that from then on, and he kind of drug me along to some UFO meeting, of course with NICAP, with Don Keogh back in those days, and I got hooked on it, and I've been doing it ever since.
Going up to Colorado, I think.
That's right. I'm going to be in Colorado shooting a episode for In Search Of.
It's a good opportunity for you, Drew.
Yes. The folks there at
In Search Of
have contacted me, and we're going to be going up to Colorado, and we're going to be shooting some scenes there, and we'll probably be doing some follow-up work out in California later on this year, and hopefully I'll be on as their sort of resident UFO expert.
Well, that'll
and,
be, that'll
this
be great.
Will be on the Fox Network this fall.
That'll be great, Jim. I hope you still talk to us when you become a big TV star.
You bet, Jerry. Not a problem.
Talking about In Search Of, that you're going to do this cattle mutilation thing, and I don't want to get off into that subject too much again because we discussed it last week, and it's one of the scary things about UFOs. But you say Colorado's kind of the home area for that, huh?
Well, they have a lot of strange occurrences up there in the Mysterious Valley area. And another one of the more famous cases I've investigated was Tim Edwards' sighting back in 97, I believe it was.
Well, explain to a novice to me what that's all about.
Okay. Well, Tim owns a restaurant up in Salida, Colorado. and it's right on the Arkansas River up there. And he was outside his new house.
We're on the Arkansas River here in Muskogee.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
so right. You can just kind of take it all the way down from there.
That's right. And it's beautiful up there in Colorado. They actually have white water rides down the river right past his restaurant.
Uh-huh.
It's called the Flying Saucer Restaurant, by the way. And anyway, he was outside his house shooting some video of his daughter, and they noticed this object up in the sky. And it was a long, elongated cigar shape, and it was a sort of a pulsing white color, and this was during the daylight. And I have a copy that he made of the video that he took, and it's definitely strange. It's unexplainable. There's no earthly reason for that to be there. It's not a vapor trail or anything like that. It actually moves, and
is it moving fast?
No, very slow, very slow. But within it, it almost has a strobing effect to it, and his video made it through all the media there, local media in Colorado, and I think the media there, they're in tune to this more than a lot of places are, because it happens there all the time.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of sightings around there.
Right, there and New Mexico. You know, New Mexico is really the UFO state, in my opinion. It always has been. Even back in 1948, in some of the early history of ufology, U.S. Air Force was involved in New Mexico sightings, but not of your classic UFO saucer types, but of green fireballs, of all things. And the Air Force was so concerned about these sightings at all the nuclear facilities back in 48, they set up an investigation organization, a project, and it's called Project Twinkle. And this went on for about 2 years. And they actually set up observation posts there in New Mexico up on some of the hills up by Cloudcroft. And actually, we were there with high-tech camera equipment ready to take pictures of these fireballs. And one of the officers in charge of this project was flying into Kirtland Air Force Base and actually had one of the fireballs pass him as he was flying in to investigate them.
Wow.
And this is something that's still going on today.
You mean there's still fireballs?
There are still reports of fireballs almost weekly. And they almost are always either a green or a blue color.
Are they always in New Mexico?
No. We have them here in Oklahoma. There's been several reports in western Oklahoma of these fireballs.
Now, are these big fireballs like a ship or something, or a comet or something, or are they small?
No, they're pretty... when people see them, it's a pretty dramatic event. It lights up the whole sky.
Wow.
Like a... I have a way of describing it because I've never seen one, but the way they describe them, it's like lightning going off, and it has this green glow to it. And it's just a large ball that travels across the sky very low, and there's no sounds off of them.
Hmm. And, I was sort of saying it might be static electricity or something that would make noise, you would think.
Right. That's one of the things I'm really interested in, is UFOs that do make noise, because that's such a rarity. There's very few cases of them making noise. It seems for some reason they're a stealthy kind of craft, and most people don't hear a thing when they see things.
You know, you said that since 1948 they've had these green fireballs. This is 2001. There must be some predominant theory about them. I mean,
well, Air Force hired a predominant astronomer back in those days, Dr. La Paz, to look into these fireballs, and he got together with a fellow named Ed Ruppelt. Some ufologists might know the name. He was in charge of U.S. Air Force's Project Blue Book back in those days. Project Blue Book was the project, at least the public side, of the Air Force's investigations into UFOs.
When you say public side, what do you mean there? I know they had a lot of secrecy, and they just now released some things, and they still have them blacked out.
Exactly. A lot of things are still kept secret from those early days. Of course, we do have the report of the Blue Book of all the sightings that they investigated, well over 12,000. Over the years, they came up with 701 that they just absolutely cannot explain. That's kind of an interesting deal. Most of them happened in 52, 57, I believe in 64 we had a big flap, And then here lately, back in 97, we had a big flap.
Yeah, 97. Was that the year of all of those famous lights in Phoenix?
Mm-hmm. They had two sightings that night, at least, two different objects. I have videos of that, too. One object flew over more of a northern trajectory over there in, I can't remember the name of the town right now. It's north of Phoenix, several hundred miles. And it was seen there about 8:30 in the evening. And people took a video of it. And then the other object was seen after 10, about 10:15 in the evening. And it was seen in Phoenix. And
by thousands of people, I guess.
By thousands of people.
And the weather the weather balloon theory, was that what the Air Force came up with? Or
well,
inverted
actually,
lights, or what did they come up with?
Well, they got a little creative with it, but they kind of got themselves in trouble, too. Their excuse for that was that it was an aircraft on a training mission out there shooting off flares. And why they want to shoot off flares that high in the sky, I just cannot understand. What are they trying to... there's nothing to illuminate up that high. Also, they said it was under a continuing project called Project Snowflake. And I did a little research on that.
Hmm? I've heard of that. Now, you did a little research on Snowflake, right?
Right. And going back into some of the early Air Force records, it's a program that they had to debunk sightings in the early days. And it's basically a public relations ploy to... have experts come out and tell people what they saw when they knew for sure that that's what they wasn't what they saw. Example of that, the famous Dr. J. Allen Hynek was an Air Force consultant during the whole time that Blue Book was around, and he had many cases that he investigated. I work for his organization now. The J. Allen Hynek Center for UFO Studies out of Chicago. And he always was forced just about by the Air Force to come up with these outrageous excuses for UFOs. I'm actually writing an article of some of the more famous excuses they've come up with over the years.
Can you recall some of those examples?
Well, what he came up with was is swamp gas.
Yeah, I've heard of that before.
Heard of that one. That's one that he actually had to make up and come up with to explain a sighting that was seen by at least two police officers.
And now, police officers and airline pilots, they get a little more attention when they spot these things.
Exactly. They're trained observers.
Mm-hmm.
And we had another incident like that back in, I believe it was January or February of 2000, up in...
recent.
Near St. Louis, right. We had four police officers see an object fly over a very low altitude. These officers, of course, if they made a story up about it, they could get fired from their jobs for falsifying records. So I take their sighting report very, very seriously. And to this day, we don't know what the object was. It's considered large, black, triangular, and didn't make any noise at all.
Did you get any rain out there in Elk City tonight?
Just a little drop.
No thunderstorms or anything. Reason I interrupted you on that is I was just thinking about thunderstorms at spring, daylight savings time's coming up. And I guess the Roswell incident, there was thunderstorms going on during that time, right? Do UFOs show up, flying saucers show up, and thunderstorms are these triangles, I guess, is what everybody sees now.
Well...
Are they
I have a good example
him?
Of that. I'm sure you know Gary England on Channel.
Oh, sure. I know Gary very well.
Right. On his webpage there, go to, I believe it's 9online.com.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the weather page, and you'll see a link to the unknown flying thing. And this is an object that they taped during the May 3rd tornado. It was actually in the tornado, and it was flying against the wind.
Wow.
You have no idea what this is. And
they think it's a... How do they know it's flying against the wind, I wonder? I guess radar reading itself?
He had people, observers out there that were actually watching the weather. So
uh-huh.
they knew what was going on right there. He had a crew right there at the time. And the video's there online, and it's amazing. Some amazing video. It lasts about 30 seconds or so, and if you have... either Windows Media Player or Real Audio, you can link to it, and it'll play for you. And it's one of the most amazing sightings I've ever encountered.
We're talking with Jim Hickman here, and his website is thehickmanreport.com. H-I-C-K-M-A-N. You have to put the in front of it, though, right?
Right.
TheHickmanReport.com. www.thehickmanreport.com. We've got a link over there on our UFO section to it. A couple of places. We're talking UFOs with Jim Hickman of The Hickman Report. And Jim,
thank you for that opening music there. My boss, of course, coined the phrase close encounters.
Yeah, the man you were just talking about,
right,
I think.
Right, Dr. Hynek. So thank you very much. We appreciate that.
Okay.
He's actually in that movie, if you ever get a chance to see it.
He's in it, right?
Right. Yeah. He plays one of the scientists towards the end.
Yeah, well, I've seen that movie many times. It's interesting. And we talked about all the encounters, and you told me there's the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth.
Right.
Is that it?
Oh, there's quite a bit more to it. We could go way in depth. There's the valley.
Well, one of the things I think we want to do tonight is get into the history of UFOs. But before we even do that, taking up from last week's conversation, and we always want to do some new sightings. Anything in Oklahoma this week of major consequence or basic?
Nothing in Oklahoma, really. Not much in the whole U.S. There's some sightings happened.
Do you think the flap is dying down?
Well, it's hard to say. Sometimes it just moves on to the places. We've had several sightings in Puerto Rico this last week, one in Honolulu, Hawaii. We had a UFO in western Pennsylvania show up.
It seems to be a lot of UFO action on the East Coast, and we don't normally think about that, but even that famous couple, I think, that was had the encounter where they Barney and... Yeah, right. That was up in Vermont or New Hampshire or someplace, wasn't it?
Right. I believe it was New Hampshire.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand from talking to our producer, Larry Dickin, there's been a little bit of activity in the New York City and New Jersey area in the last couple of weeks.
Well, maybe we're going to have another flap like we did back in the 80s. There, we had, back in those days, they seemed like there was a siege going on down there. Every night they had a sighting of some kind or another.
Well, that kind of reminds me of that famous stuff back at National Airport in Washington, which we talked about last week.
Right.
We may even talk about that tonight, about UFO history.
Right.
Okay. Now, we're talking with Jim Hickman here, and we're going to discuss UFO history in a moment, but right now the sightings. Anything stand out there? Were these mostly triangles or round objects?
This last week, it seems like the predominantly we had... what we call nocturnal lights, just unusual lights in the night sky.
Oh, yeah, you have some on those Lubbock lights on your website, and took a picture and to advertise your show.
Oh, great, great. That Lubbock sighting was very interesting because four astronomy professors at the college there saw the objects go over.
It'll be interesting. I have a couple of amateur astronomers that listen to me religiously, and neither one of them seem to believe in UFOs at all.
Well, you'd be surprised how many astronomers have seen things they can't identify. Dr. Hynek made a study of that back in the 60s, and I believe he came up with 18% of the astronomers had actually seen a UFO before.
Hmm.
So and it's probably gone up from there.
And they're out there looking, so...
Exactly, out looking, and sometimes they see things they can't explain. That's been true throughout history, of course. And I guess that should lead me up to what I was going to get into tonight. It's sort of a timeline of UFOs. A lot of people think the UFO phenomenon started back in 1947 with maybe Roswell or the Kenneth Arnold case. Of course, a little research, we know better. The Bible has many cases of sightings in it, of course. I won't get into that.
Well, we've talked about the spaceships of Ezekiel before.
Exactly. There's a place down in Texas that has a exact replica of the Ezekiel's wheel on display. And I can't remember the name of the town right now, but I have a picture of it on my website somewhere. What I'm going to do is kind of give you a little brief outline here of the history of UFOs. And this is sort of coming from my new book that I just signed the contract on this last week.
Congratulations!
Yes, we're going to get published on this. And the book's title is going to be 5,000 Years of UFOs. Are We Really Alone? and it's going to come out through America House Publishing, and we expect to have it out in the next few months.
Well, great. Well, as you get a little closer to it, why, let us know, and we'll be glad to promote that a lot.
Great,
keep
great.
Us informed on that.
Well,
so it's going to be 5,000 years of UFO history, huh?
Exactly. Well, going back at least to the Sumerians. They, of course, say they came from space, that their ancestors were from space.
They do say that?
That's what people say.
All of them or one of them? Or
that's part of their religion. That's actually part of, if we want to get into this or not, but it's part of most every religion, is that people came down from the sky, gods of some kind. The old Dokken theory, chariots of the gods sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that goes with any sort of the religions.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people say, well, maybe Adam and Eve was a plant from someplace else that they came here. You know, I mean, you can take all of those kind of theories, and you're right. So I guess it does go back 5,000 years.
Right. Well, that's the theory part. And I thought I'd get into a little bit more of sighting reports from back in that era.
Yeah, well, I'd like to follow that.
Okay. Let's go back to 1500 B.C., That takes us back quite a few years.
That's 3,600 years, I think.
Right. The Pharaoh Thutmose III in Egypt, he saw a silent, foul-smelling circle of fire in the sky and flying discs. And this was 1500 B.C. We'll go a little further up through history, still in the B.C. category, 329 B.C. Of course, everybody knows that Alexander the Great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he had several sightings throughout his career. One was two strange objects in the sky dived on his army repeatedly as they attempted a river crossing.